And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today, we are continuing our countdown series to the beginning of Kansas football. We are stepping backwards through the Kansas schedule to talk about now the Oklahoma Sooners. We started with TCU Horned Frogs last week. That is the finale for Kansas. Now we are talking about that second-to-last game for Kansas, which is Oklahoma. To help me do that, I have Kamiar Mehrabian from Crimson and Cream Machine. We've had him on a few times in the past. Kamiar, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, man. It's a rainy day over here in Oklahoma, so it's a pretty dreary day, but I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, no problem. It's been raining the last few days over here in Virginia, so I'm glad today is a day. It looks like there's a little bit of a break. It's supposed to rain again tonight, unfortunately. Like, you know, it seems weird on days that we really want to be out and about.
Right.
It's been really, really bad weather the last few weeks. So, but obviously we are looking forward to a time where, who knows, it might be rainy as well down in Oklahoma in November. I'm not really sure what the weather is normally like, but November 21st is when this game is scheduled. Should be an interesting, I think, an interesting kind of time frame there. The question, I guess, obviously this is going to be towards the end of the year. So we'll have a pretty good idea what these two teams are going to be like based off of what they've done in the actual year to this point. But looking at it now from a, you know, 5 months removed of when we're actually going to see this game, you know, I think the biggest storyline for Oklahoma coming to the season, obviously, is Spencer Rattler, you know, first time being a starter. He's a redshirt freshman, if I am remembering correctly. But there was some pretty high praise for him last year, you know, before they had gotten the transfer in, you know, to kind of take his spot from him. So what are your feelings on Spencer Rattler? I believe you were on the podcast saying that you thought he could have started last year if they needed him to.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about Spencer Rattler is he's done the same process that Caleb Williams, the number one quarterback in the country prep ranks, has done. Is when he was a senior in high school, him and Lincoln Riley would meet like weekly on Zoom chats or whatever and actually break down film and how they, you know, want to do at Oklahoma. And then he had a year as a redshirt freshman to learn from Lincoln Riley, learn about the offense, and learn just from really Jalen Hurts' mistakes of throwing the ball, but also just putting the ball on the ground. And then, of course, now he's going into really, I mean, if you look at it, 2 years of football under Lincoln Riley, one of them being in an actual uniform. And the thing about Spencer Rattler is that people will say, oh, well, Oklahoma, they haven't done it without a transfer quarterback, which is, I'm sure, you know, it is what it is. And people act like, you know, Oklahoma's been leaning on transfer quarterbacks strictly for success. And that's not to say it's not true that they haven't had very successful transfer quarterbacks, but we're really getting to see what Lincoln Riley's first go at his own recruited quarterback at Oklahoma is going to be like. And if Spencer Rattler, and I think several people that understand his talent, people understand that like what went down at practices in the summer and the fall last year, if Spencer Rattler had enrolled early and was on campus in January instead of June, I don't know if Oklahoma takes a transfer quarterback at Jalen Hurts, because you look at summer workouts and you looked at practices in the fall last year in 2019, which seems like 5 years ago. He was making throws in practice that Jalen Hurts just he couldn't make. And these are, you know, throws by a freshman. And now people forget that he was removed from his football team in Pinnacle High School in Arizona. So he was just coming to Oklahoma, hadn't played football for a while, and he put on some weight, and then looks like in this quarantine, he's put on a lot of good weight. So it's just a matter of him staying healthy and also just being a mature person, because athletically and quarterback wise, he's got all the skills. It's just a matter of maturity and just really on and off the field that's going to affect him. I think athletically and quarterback-wise, Oklahoma's going to be very satisfied with what they see out of Spencer Rattler.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I'm kind of asking this tongue-in-cheek because he is a first-year starter, but, you know, do you think, given kind of the history of Lincoln Riley coaching at the quarterback position, that Spencer Rattler should be one of the favorites for the Heisman this year, even though he is just a redshirt freshman. I mean, the odd book, the odds makers right now have him at 12-1, which is the fourth best odds of anyone. And I think that has to be on the back of what Lincoln Riley really brings to this. But, you know, should he be in that conversation because of what he can do specifically? Or do you think that that's mainly based off of the system that Oklahoma has been able to put forward that really highlights what a quarterback can do?
In any other year, like for example, last year with Jalen Hurts, I would say, man, it's all in the back of Lincoln Riley. There's no way Jalen Hurts goes from completing 60-ish% of his passes and doing what he did at Alabama to completing over 70% of his passes and running another prolific offense without what Lincoln Riley was able to do. I mean, you look at what he did with Baker Mayfield for 3 years. You look at what he did with Kyler Murray for another year. And then you look at the offense that Jalen Hurts ran for a year, and it's completely different. Like the style and what they ran for four consecutive years was completely different than what you saw under Jalen Hurts. And now you're getting to open the offense back up to throwing the ball over the middle, doing a lot of seam routes, making throws that aren't there, but throwing a wide receiver open and trusting the routes that Jalen Hurts that didn't necessarily do. So I think there's a combination. I think it's somewhere in the middle for the Sooners. I think it's somewhere in the middle for Spencer Rattler and Lincoln Riley that, yes, it is a combination of Lincoln Riley because, I mean, since 2015, you've seen him put together prolific offenses with immaculate quarterback play from at least two of the three quarterbacks so far. And then they said, you know, Oklahoma's own Barry Trammell said, oh, at the Big 12 Media Days last year in July, he said, hey, since you guys are planning to take a dip in offensive production, and Lincoln Riley just stood on the stage and said, no, we're not planning to take a dip in offensive production. Everybody, including myself, were like, okay, whatever, Lincoln. And then instead of being the number one offense in the country, they were the number three offense in the country. So combined Lincoln Riley's just philosophies and his progressive attitude toward offenses and making everything spread out, with a talent that is like Spencer Rattler, I'm not surprised by the idea that he would be on a Heisman watch list, considering all these other freshman players getting acumen and all these other players, freshman players, really getting recognition since Johnny Manziel, because it was taboo to give a freshman the Heisman, even though Adrian Peterson should have been higher up on that list and was on that list with Jason White. You see that with Trevor Lawrence and a lot of other guys that say, you know, it's okay to give a young player, a redshirt freshman or a sophomore, a Heisman Trophy. So I'm not surprised he's on that list. Now, do I think he's going to win it? Do I think he'll even be invited to New York? No, he's got some issues with healthy receivers, most notably Jaden Hazelwood, and even Theo Howard, the transfer from UCLA. But no, I'm not surprised by him being on the Heisman list. It wouldn't shock me at all if he ended up in New York, but I don't think he will. But I do think what he brings to the table is going to be similar to what people saw in Trevor Lawrence, and his ability to just throw darts, his ability to make the throws, and his ability, his athletic ability, honestly, to scramble when he needs to. He's very, very kind of like Baker Mayfield in that aspect of, he's not going to beat you with his legs like a Kyler Murray, but he can use his legs to extend plays and even get a first down if he needs to. But he's not going to, like Jalen Hurts or Kyler Murray, take off and get you 60 yards at a time.
Yeah, which is understandable. I mean, you know, it's one of the, I think Jalen Hurts was a much more, I think, run-oriented quarterback, and it really allowed Lincoln Riley to really use that and change up the way that he did things. I mean, the one thing you have to say about Lincoln Riley is the fact that he is very good at taking the players that he has, especially in those offensive skill positions, and really crafting his system for the particular year around what their abilities are, which is obviously like what you have to be able to do in the Big 12, since it's so offensively focused. The way you differentiate your offense is by really embracing what your, you know, what your skill players are able to give you and really taking advantage of that. I don't think anybody in the Big 12, and honestly in most of the country, does it better than Lincoln Riley does, which is kind of scary as a non-Oklahoma fan, you know, like having to go up against Oklahoma every year. You know, you've really got to think about what it is you're going to be able to do, whether you try to, you know, run for them shot for shot and try to keep up with them that way, or you really try to find something novel to do defensively to see if you can slow them down a little bit. Kind of speaking about, you know, what they've lost this year, though, because obviously losing CeeDee Lamb, he was a high draft pick. You know, he's probably like the biggest name, especially mm-hmm. since there is kind of some questions about the rest of the wide receiver core. You know, who are those main guys? Are you expecting anybody to be able to step up and be as productive as CeeDee Lamb was?
And that's the thing. When Jaden Hazelwood tore his ACL, or as Lincoln Riley will call it, a lower leg injury, because he doesn't like to say torn ACL for some reason, as he did with Caleb Kelly and other players. Jaden Hazelwood was the guy that most people crowned as the, hey, this is the next big receiver at OU, and him to tear his ACL over, I think, Easter weekend-ish around that area really was a kind of a blow to Oklahoma. But people forget that they have Charleston Rambo returning, who I think he was a second leading receiver on Oklahoma's team, and he had over 700 yards of total offense regarding, you know, receiving yards for a quarterback that stared down CeeDee Lamb the entire time in the pocket. So that's good for Oklahoma with Charleston Rambo coming back. But also, they've got guys that showed flashes. They have their 3 5-star receivers, of course, Jaden Hazelwood being one of them. Fia Weiss is going to be a name that Oklahoma fans are going to get familiar with pretty quickly. You've got Theo Howard, which he did have an Achilles thing, but he'll be good to go. Maybe not by the first game of the season, but he will be good to go during the season. And then other names you got to get to know is Austin Stogner, of course, and Trajan Bridges, just like Ronnie Perkins and Stevenson. Those dudes got suspended for NCAA violations, so they'll be out for 5 games of the year. But then once Trajan Bridges is back, you know, that's another one of those 5-star receivers that Lincoln Riley was able to recruit. And it's not like those guys aren't able to practice. I mean, Spencer Rattler is hitting these guys up all the time. And then really after that, you look at some of the transfer wide receivers that came in, like Obi Obiolo came in from Marshall, which is essentially like just a carbon copy, almost looks like, of Lee Morris, who was a walk-on at one point that Kyler Murray absolutely loved. He'll play in kind of a flex look when they don't want to get big like Austin Stogner. And then really you look at what they also have. I mean, it's just now you're looking at freshmen. You have Denzel Mims, Marvin Mims, excuse me. You're going to have other guys like you'll have the Stoops son, you'll have Drake Stoops there, and you'll have other guys there. But yeah, that's the main concern is that, wow, Oklahoma, you know, who's known for having a prolific offense, like, you know, your wide receiver core is not necessarily the deepest it has been. And that's something that Oklahoma, that Lincoln Riley, you know, is counting his stars at, is because he has Bill Beatenbow there as a offensive line coach and co-offensive coordinator. They have like 5 co-offensive coordinators, probably just for the money. But Bill Beatenbow has built a pretty great offensive line. That's what allows them to make people like Jalen Hurts really successful. So when you look at Spencer Rattler, who can do it all when they're reopening their offense, Bill Beatenbow's offensive line is going to be so important for that offense to go to, because now instead of running around in the backfield, he has an offensive line that returns 5 guys that have started, and they return their H-back, they return another fullback, they return Kennedy Brooks, who's had a 1,000-yard rushing seasons back-to-back, and will probably do that once again this season as a junior. So, you know, they return a lot of the ancillary pieces. They return a lot of the pieces that are like auxiliary to what you actually see the guys making big plays. You know, Charleston Rambo, he was previously your deep threat guy because he runs a 4.44, 4.5 40, and now he's going to have to step up and be actually one of the guys. And so Oklahoma, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they line up in a lot of split Y sets with 2 wide receivers and a tight end and 2 running backs, or a running back and a fullback, or H-back and Jeremiah Hall or Braden Willis, and just do a lot of play action plays and stuff like that. So they have the luxury of having an elite offensive line and an elite offensive coach that will help them out a little more. But I think a lot of Sooner fans and a lot of people, even I think the coaching staff is, you know, I'm pretty sure that they're like, yeah, the wide receiver situation in Oklahoma, not that great right now because they're so young. And I think that's a major question mark heading into this season.
Yeah, the one thing I will say, though, I mean, because last year the biggest question mark for the offense was the offensive line, because they were missing, or they had a lot of pieces they were having to replace. Like, there was the question of whether they were going to be able to hold up well enough to give Jalen Hurts the time that he needed, even with all the other skill position players that were really good. I think the flip side is what we have this year, where there's some questions about the wide receiver. Maybe the running back isn't quite as solid as it has been in years past, although I don't think there's much of a drop-off. But the offensive line is not a question on this team, and that is where you – I think Kansas State kind of showed that last year, where if you have a really solid offensive line, it allows you to do a lot of things elsewhere and develop elsewhere throughout the course of the season and still kind of keep that baseline that allows you to be competitive. I think those that are expecting Oklahoma to take a big step back, you know, because of wide receiver or skill position player issues, I think are going to be, you know, unpleasantly surprised, because I do think that this offensive line gives them a very, very strong base. Like, that's why most people, I think, were expecting them to kind of slip last year. There was a lot of questions there. There was a lot of questions about whether that would develop fast enough, because offensive line, I think, is one of the hardest places to develop talent and to really kind of build that camaraderie and build that cohesion that you need from five different players that are all playing, you know, right next to each other. And so, you know, I think that's where Oklahoma has a big advantage. And but flipping to the other side of, you know, the other side of the coin here, the defense, because I think with as many good offensive skill sets we have and offensive teams that we have in the Big 12, what really kind of separates every year is how good that defense is able to be. You know, Oklahoma has a lot of early challenges, and you know, they lost a lot in the draft, on especially on the defensive end. They had quite a few key players that are now gone. What does that defense look like? Are there big holes that you're worried about now, or are there guys that have kind of been sitting back and waiting? You know, I mean, and partly the reason I wonder about this is because they were such an up and down team last year defensively. And if you're losing a lot of your big pieces, like a lot of development, and with all the COVID stuff, I'm just not sure how much development has actually happened.
Yeah, and you look at the defensive side of the ball, and the offense returns eight guys on offense, and then, of course, like the eight guys that they're returning, and the three guys they lost were a quarterback, a wide receiver, and a running back, Trey Sermon, but to Ohio State, mind you. But the defense, they return nine starters if you lump in Caleb Kelly with that. I mean, if you don't lump in Caleb Kelly, who had an ACL injury and then did actually play the last four games of the year, then they return eight. And then, of course, the three you lost to the draft, or two you lost to the draft, one who was woefully undervalued in Parno Motley, who had a hell of a season. You lose Neville Gallimore, who I believe went in the third round. You lose Kenneth Murray, who went in the first round. And Parno Motley, who became a really great corner for them under Alex Grinch. And, you know, it would be different. I feel like Texas right now, Texas trying to install new offense and defense with new coordinators during all this must be hell. Especially, I think they had 13 players that tested positive for a virus. In Oklahoma, they're in the second year of Alex Grinch, and they went from, I believe, like 85th or somewhere in the 80s to defensive SP plus to being in the top 35 at one point. And then I think they settled around like 41 after LSU just ripped them a new one, just like they did everybody else. But yeah, it's so the defensive line, Oklahoma did lose quite a few bodies along the defensive line, and it doesn't help that Ronnie Perkins is suspended for the first five games of the season. That includes the Texas game. Who knows? Maybe there'll be COVID waivers for some odd reason, because this is the world we live in today. But yeah, the defensive line with Neville Gallimore, they're honestly going to replace him by committee. They had a guy that could have come back in Corey Roberson. He could have come back and played this year. And he didn't get that much playing time. Actually, I think he got like one snap. And then you have another guy who was able to see the field but didn't actually get that. His name escapes me right now, another defensive lineman. And then they, of course, recruited the number one JUCO player in the country, or the number one defensive line JUCO players. I think it was a top five guy, and Perrion Winfrey from Iowa Western Community College. And really, I think they're just going to try to plug and play a lot of guys along that defensive line. It maybe won't be pretty early on, especially, you know, their first test, the second game of the season in Norman against Tennessee. You'll get to see those defensive linemen against an SEC offensive line and defensive line. So I'm curious to see what that looks like. But they, you have a Jalen Redmond there. You have a couple other guys that you can be really excited about, especially at the rush end. And then a couple other guys that are young, like a Marcus Hicks or a Marcus Stripling. So there's a lot of young guys that they're looking forward to that are really big and really solid, but you have yet to see them play. So it's, you're kind of concerned as far as that, because Neville Gallimore seemed like to be an anchor. And, you know, LSU at times triple teamed Neville Gallimore in the middle of the field in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. So you're just like, okay, I don't know what that looks like without Neville Gallimore, but I think the one gapping scheme is going to help them so much there when Mike Stoops was running two gaps and Alex Grinch trip goes to one gap and made them much more dynamic and a lot more, their havoc rate went up to cause a lot more confusion along the offensive line. Now, I think the place that most people for the Sooners are really concerned about is middle linebacker. Kenneth Murray had been starting at the Mike since his freshman season. And his first two seasons at Oklahoma with Mike Stoops and under the tutelage of linebackers coach Tim Kish wasn't that great. I mean, you look at Kenneth Murray and you saw a freak athlete, inside linebacker running like a 4.5 40, and the guy flying across the field, Superman tackling everybody, grabbing people across the jersey, across the chest, and just taking them down. And is just pretty incredible his rate of pursuit. I mean, you could see in the Big 12 title game. He himself took out Charlie Brewer, not because he was a dirty play, but it was just those guys were after him. And now you don't have Kenneth Murray, but you suddenly have Deshaun White. Deshaun White played last year with Kenneth Murray, and he was a solid guy. And Brian Odom, the new linebackers coach, who Kenneth Murray gives a ton of praise to, says he's the best coach he's ever had in his life. And it makes you think what, you know, his coaching was like at OU prior to that with Tim Kish and Mike Stoops. But Deshaun White, Brian Odom said he's the most instinctual linebacker he's ever had in his coaching career. So it's high praise for him last year before he even played a down. So I'm really curious to see what that next step for Deshaun White's going to look like. But then you're still left with that, who's going to play the other linebacker spot? Is it going to be Caleb Kelly, who was supplanted by Curtis Bolton the previous year because Caleb Kelly couldn't play the wheel position that well under a Mike Stoops defense? But now in this kind of 4-2-5 set or this hybrid 3-3-5, it's weird with Alex Grinch runs, but you could call it 4-2-5 with a rush edge instead of a traditional defensive end. You're really looking at two inside linebackers that have different skill sets. But Caleb Kelly, you know, as soon as he was healthy to play for the Sooners last year, he got on the field in really crucial spots against TCU. I think Iowa State, Oklahoma State. No, it wasn't Iowa State. TCU, Oklahoma State, Baylor in the Big 12 title game. And again, he saw the field against LSU. So a guy that, you know, we're having question marks about in his first time back off of an ACL tear is getting really, really substantial snaps and really serious parts of the game where the game was likely in doubt because of a Jalen Hurts fumble or interception that happened during the TCU game, but other games as well, just like the Baylor game and the other game down the stretch. So the question mark that people have most is, what's that Mike linebacker going to look like? Is it going to be Deshaun White shifting over from the will? Is it going to be Caleb Kelly putting there because he has the most experience? Everybody else returning other than Parnell Motley, but Oklahoma is very excited about Trey Brown. They get Trey Norwood back. They have Buki there. They like Delarian Turner Yale at safety. Patrick Fields is there. They have a JUCO guy in Justin Harrington that he's had some qualification issues, but should be on campus within the next few weeks. So they're really excited with the next step the defensive backs can take. But everybody is wondering because Oklahoma on both sides of the ball, you look at the Mike, which is the quarterback of the defense, and you look at the quarterback, you know, Oklahoma lost both of those guys. So you're really looking at the signal callers of the defense on both sides, and that's most concerning for anybody else. Oklahoma will fill out the bodies specifically because Lincoln Riley has been able to recruit so well over the last couple of years. And now it's just a matter of, hey, you have your two most important guys, and they probably needed that spring to really develop more of that leadership role and develop more of what they're seeing. And they didn't get that. So that might be trouble for the Sooners early on in the schedule.
Yeah, that actually leads me into my next topic, but I'm running really long for a break. So I'm going to go ahead and take one real quick. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk podcast. And we're back. All right. So we talked about it before the break and you kind of led into it for me. Obviously COVID-19, you know, really kind of decimated a lot of the spring football practices. I don't think any school got any more than like three or four practices in, and a lot of schools didn't get any. But, you know, like, you can make an argument that there's a lot of teams that aren't going to necessarily be super affected by this. You know, ones where the coaches have been there for a long time. They have a well-established system. You know, the better teams from last year probably have systems set up so that way they can kind of weather this sort of thing. I mean, I get the feeling that Oklahoma is kind of one of those that didn't really seem to be too affected by it. But based off your last, you know, answer talking about the defense, it seems like maybe there's a few spots that it really, really could have been used and that could cause some problems for them, especially early. Do you think that Oklahoma is one of the teams and probably the team in the Big 12 that was or that will be least affected by the fact that they didn't have spring football? Or are the holes that they do have big enough that it could actually be a big issue for them coming into the year?
Yeah, and so I think that Oklahoma, because they bring back 8 and 9 to starters offensively and defensively, you look at it on the surface and say, well, I mean, they shouldn't be too affected. But then you look at the positions that they lost, and, you know, a Mike linebacker, like, you know, a guy that went first round. And then you look at Jalen Hurts, who left. And then, but I think a lot of people agree that Spencer Rattler could have done really, really well, just knowing from what he's done in practice and was able to do in practice. You know, it just really depends. And I know that's a really weird and dumb answer as far as it's kind of a cop out. It's like, well, it depends. But I think that for the most part, they will be okay on offense. I think Lincoln Riley's offense, regardless of what they do, will be potent, and they will score upwards of 35 points a game on average and several more points in the Big 12 because that Tennessee game looms large. You know, Tennessee is getting better, especially under Pruitt, but we'll see what happens there. But I think a lot of people will look at that defense and say, you know, what are they about? Because they've got the defensive backs coming back. They have most of the defensive line coming back, Sans, Neville Gallimore, and Marquise Overton and other guys, but they have other talented guys coming back on the defensive line. But you look at the middle of the defense and see how teams schemed around Kenneth Murray. And later in the season, you noticed his Butkus award-winning acumen or his Butkus award-winning chances kind of went out the window because people started taking him out of the play, and because he was such an important part to that defense. And now you take that guy out of the middle of the field. And then, so what happens to the middle of the field now? Because in the Big 12, as you know best, that's where people like to attack in wide open spaces. This is not the SEC. It's not run pass. It's not like that. It's attack the open field, especially in the zones over the middle of the defense. And so if Oklahoma has an issue with the middle of the defense, which Caleb Kelly really could use that spring, and Deshaun White could have really used that spring, that raises some red flags and some questions. So those will be things that the first time you're really getting a look at it for the Sooners is going to be that Tennessee game in Norman, because Oklahoma, their first game of the season is supposed to be Missouri State. And so that's not going to tell you a lot. Oklahoma's going to win that game 55 to 17 or something like that. They're going to win like by a lot of points, and everybody's going to say, oh, look, oil check just fine. But you're not going to know anything about this team to the second game of the season, and you didn't get to see a spring game. So you have no idea what this team is going to look like and who the favorites and who's able to put on a show. So I think offensively, they'll be okay. They've got the offensive line, like we talked about, Bill Beanimbo building a fortress, it seems like, around Norman with consistent 4 and 5-star guys and more on the way, seemingly looks like on July 4th with Bryce Foster. But, and then running backs that, you know, Kennedy Brooks, again, who was number one in the country running outside the tackle because Bill Beanimbo loves the GT counter play. And so Oklahoma can lean on the offensive line early on offense. That's not a problem. But I think the defense, you know, having Deshaun White needing to step up more, having Caleb Kelly in his senior year, a former 5-star guy, you know, can he put his talents to the test and be a formidable starting inside linebacker on an Alex Grinch defense, which things are much more simplified than they were under Mike Stoops? So I think your question about, you know, is Oklahoma going to take a step forward? Are they going to take a step back? Are they going to remain pat? I think they'll be okay on offense. The defense is the major question marks. If I had to guess, Oklahoma might have some issues with the defense early until the Texas game, like per usual every year, and then they may figure some stuff out afterwards. But I think going into the second year of Alex Grinch's defense, not necessarily demanding perfection, but demanding a high octane, just try your freaking best and run hard to the ball, I think that'll shore up a lot of issues that might have been glaring issues under a Mike Stoops defense.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and, you know, I feel like Oklahoma is really set up well for this, even though they have all these, you know, these early tests and, you know, kind of worried about this and not having what they normally have. Like, I feel like the system is set up for them to weather this. And while, you know, Tennessee could potentially be a struggle for them early, I also don't think that Tennessee is anywhere near good enough to really pull that upset, especially with it being in Norman. You know, maybe you'd be worried about the game at Army. You know, and actually, I guess at this point, we'll just kind of go through the schedule because that's kind of the next thing to talk about. You know, they had that scare against Army recently, but, you know, this game at Army shouldn't, you know, I don't think that they were going to be in another situation where you expect to lose that game early. And then Baylor's got a bunch of questions coming into this year, even though they were the second best team last year in the conference. But looking at the schedule is very, very front loaded. I mean, you play, you know, the other four teams that are the kind of the consensus who everyone's expecting to be in the top, you know, half of the Big 12, with, you know, maybe an argument for TCU over Baylor, but you've got those four back to back with no breaks in between. You know, it seems like this is a very, very front loaded schedule. And you know, like, is there concerns about having all those games up front? Especially with that Texas game being so early in the year. I mean, that's game number five.
You know, I think that the schedule is not too bad for Oklahoma. I mean, you have your game against Missouri State at the beginning, and then the next week it's still in Norman. If it was in Knoxville, it might be a little bit more concerned. And then they have a bye week in between Tennessee and Army. And then who even knows if Oklahoma's going to end up going to New York right now? I mean, with the virus, there might be rumblings of Oklahoma making a deal with some other Texas school to just maybe ride it out for this year and reschedule the Army game. But, you know, Missouri State, yeah, it is what it is. Tennessee, I think Tennessee is a talented team. But, I mean, you look at how they played last year, and anybody worth a darn, they got waxed by. They beat a lot of other teams by the skin of their teeth. Army, I mean, yeah, that was the game that was on pay-per-view last year for the Sooners, and they almost lost in Norman. And they probably should have lost in Norman, actually. But again, I think that under a Alex Grinch defense where you one gap and you read and you read and react really quickly instead of Mike Stoops two gapping, and like by the time you've diagnosed a play, the fullback is 2 yards up the field. I think that will be a lot more formidable for them, especially with an offense like the way they have. The Baylor game in Norman, they returned some guys, but again, they lost a lot of other guys once Matt Rhule decided to go to Carolina. So nobody's really too worried about that. But the main game that people are worried about is Texas, because it's game five. Oklahoma still doesn't have Ronnie Perkins. They still don't have Stevenson. They still don't have Trajan Bridges, which all three guys would definitely help Oklahoma. So it's like, all right, game five, Dallas, Texas, let's see what they have. And then after that, they go to Iowa State right after. And Iowa State, man, under those guys, under Matt Campbell, they become more and more formidable every single year. And this one, the very next week with Oklahoma State, that's the weird game. Because Oklahoma State game is typically right before or during or whatever. It's typically the last game of the season when Thanksgiving season is around. So the Oklahoma State game being a month earlier is really, really weird. And honestly, I don't think it's the best thing for Oklahoma State, considering that as soon as Oklahoma gets out of the Texas game, you now are allowed to play Ronnie Perkins, who is probably your best defensive lineman outside with Jalen Redmond there. And now you're allowed to play again those other suspended guys on offense. And they really, those other guys, namely Theo Howard, may be back by then. So you'll have Theo Howard back. You'll have Trajan Bridges back. You'll have Stevenson back. And it's like, okay, you don't have a lot of film on how Oklahoma's using those guys this year. So I think that Oklahoma State game is going to hinge a lot because, I mean, TCU isn't really scary because Gary Patterson's offense hasn't really been that dynamic since when they had, the years when they had Baylor. Who was their quarterback? Oh, I can't remember his name.
You're talking about last year or?
Oh no! A long time ago, when they were competing for the,
I was like, wait a minute, I'm not sure who we're talking about here.
Yeah, their offensive has not been formidable since like 2014, 2015. So TCU is not really a scare in Fort Worth. West Virginia, I mean, as West Virginia. They're not too special offensively or defensively. And then Kansas State and Norman, Kansas and Texas Tech. So like the main games that if you're Oklahoma that are pretty scary are back to back to back. You got Texas, Iowa State, and Oklahoma State. And I mean, Texas is always a big game, of course. Iowa State's been a really nail biter every year since seemingly like since 2015. Oklahoma State, this is probably the best team they've had since 2010. And so, you know, you're really kind of, those are really the three games back to back to back with no buys that you're really kind of really looking there. Otherwise, I think Oklahoma can really get through this schedule with maybe, I mean, like one loss, two loss. I wouldn't be surprised if Oklahoma has two losses in the regular season, but again, I wouldn't be surprised if they have one loss or even go undefeated because of what Oklahoma's been able to do offensively, have creating depth there, and defensively with Alex Grinch's second year when people are now not just learning the system, but just making their way and gains into the system of what Alex Grinch brings to the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and it's a little weird because, you know, like Kansas, specifically talking about this Kansas game, because I agree with you, like it's extremely front-loaded, and like the only thing that would give you any kind of pause going down the stretch is the fact that their bye week is in, you know, is after week two. Yep. And so like you could get to the end of the schedule, and like Kansas, I think only hope at this point is one of two things. Either Oklahoma is just worn out from that early part of the schedule, you know, and they have, are they dealing with injuries or dealing with like nagging things to guys, and Kansas is able to jump up, or Kansas ends up being a whole lot better than anyone expects them to be this year. And like, I don't think either of those two things are extremely likely. So, you know, like I think if we were talking right now, you'd be absolutely insane to pick this to be any closer than probably three touchdowns. But what has me a little, well, additionally last year, you know, Kansas gave Oklahoma a game until right before the half, because I think they did a few things that kind of surprised Oklahoma. The Oklahoma defense was caught flat footed a little bit. This is before Brent Dierman took over. And so, and then honestly, this was kind of like the final straw that ended up getting Brent Dierman pushed into being the offensive coordinator for Oklahoma. I'm sorry, after Oklahoma for Kansas. And, you know, so, I mean, it's one of those things where like, you know, Oklahoma was getting ready to play Texas the next week. Like, there was a lot of reasons why Oklahoma could have been looking ahead or not really necessarily paying attention to this. And, you know, this year we don't have any of that because, yeah, it's the second to last game. Maybe they're looking ahead to, you know, being potentially in the playoff or, you know, the Big 12 championship game or something like that. But it's still far enough in the future. And Texas Tech being the next week for Oklahoma isn't, you know, that big of a threat either. Like, it's very unlikely that we're going to catch Oklahoma looking ahead. And so it's really going to, I think, be a matter of Kansas is going to have to do something that Oklahoma is not expecting. Or they're going to have to be able to take advantage of the fact that Oklahoma is just beat up. You know, is there anything that Kansas is doing or anything like, I know you guys didn't have to go against them last year, so you may not be familiar with what Brent Dierman has brought to this Kansas offense. But is there anything about what they're doing or, you know, any of the personnel there that worries you that maybe Kansas could make this game more competitive than it probably should be?
I mean, I start right at the top. I look at Les Miles. I mean, you look at what Les Miles was able to accomplish from previous years, and then you look at the games that Kansas was in. I mean, yeah, Kansas went 3-9, and they did lose to Coastal Carolina, but, I mean, they had a slim defeat against West Virginia. And like you said, Oklahoma, they played Oklahoma on October 5th, the week before Kansas, and you know, Oklahoma wins, but then the next week, Kansas should have beaten Texas. Kansas should have beaten Texas. I can't stress that enough. And they played tough games. I mean, although the score at Oklahoma State was 13-31, they played Oklahoma State really tough, and Oklahoma State just pulled away at the end. They played Iowa State really, really tough. And so you look at what they're able to do with Les Miles, I think they take a next step. And I think, of course, another year of Les Miles with where Kansas was ahead of several other people in the Big 12 for recruiting because Les Miles signed a full class of all nearly three-star guys at five-star hearts. I mean, you look at a team that will probably be tough defensively and a team that has an uptick offensively and a team that's going to be more than formidable and is not going to be probably the cellar dweller that they have been in the past, that I think they will be competitive with a lot of other teams. Now, that being said, I mean, I think Oklahoma, because you look at the game's in Norman, it's at the end of the season, it's senior day. I don't think Kansas really is going to stand a chance against the Sooners here, but, you know, like there's, you look at everything involved with Kansas. I think they're going to take a step forward, and I wouldn't be surprised if Kansas maybe even gets bowl eligible this year. I mean, you look at who they bring back. You look at another year in the system under Les Miles. You look at how a lot of the players have said, you know, they wanted to come. A lot of seniors that graduated for the Jayhawks, they wanted to come back and play because they saw what Les Miles was doing for the program. I mean, and you can see that you could see that Kansas could start the season 4-0. New Hampshire, Baylor, Boston College, and Coastal Carolina, they beat Boston College last year, if I'm not mistaken. Right. And this one's in Lawrence, Kansas. Yeah, and so. Yeah. You could start the season realistically 4-0, and then you two wins away from being bowl eligible. That's not out of the question for Kansas, I don't think. So I think that, of course, Oklahoma will be the better team. I think it's a senior day. I think Oklahoma wins. Right now, we have no idea, but we're just making assumptions based upon talent level and pool. You know, a week before, Oklahoma could have like three guys test positive for COVID, and one of them might be Spencer Rattler. Who knows? But as of now, I would expect Oklahoma to win, you know, like you said, by a margin of 21 or something like that. Something not outlandish.
Yeah. The one thing that kind of strikes me is that, like, I feel like this could be a game like we saw 2 years ago in David Beatty's last year against Oklahoma, where, you know, they went in, and it was like, it was 51-40, I think the final, or 54-40. It was a really, really close score because Puka Williams went off, you know, he ran for over 200 yards. Like, they have the talent that if they can find guys that can get seams, like they can actually put up big numbers. Obviously, I think the question becomes, I don't think Kansas is going to have a defense that's going to be good enough to stop what Oklahoma is trying to do. But we could have another one of those kind of shootouts that gets everybody thinking, you know, that, man, this Kansas team really could be something in the next couple years. Obviously, it's going to require them to continue to build. It's going to require them to continue to get really good recruiting classes, especially compared to what they've done in the past. And they're starting to build another really good recruiting class based off of some of the updated rankings. But I think they still have a ways to go. Like, I think that expecting a bowl game this year would really be pushing it, but it's definitely a possibility. And it's not like one of those laugh at the person because they're obviously on something kind of possibilities, you know, you would have thought maybe last year or the year before.
I mean, I think they're going to be right on the cusp of bowl eligibility. I would not be surprised if they won five games. I would be expecting them to win at least 4-5. So I think 6 is a definite possibility there, especially if they can figure it out in the second half of the season, especially if they can win those 4 straight games at the beginning.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Kamara. Well, we're out of time for today. So real quick, where can people find your work online?
You guys can find me on crimsonandcreammachine.com. You can follow my Twitter handle at kamarabiancm. We have the podcast, The Crimson and Cream Machine, and Oklahoma Breakdown. So a lot of that stuff on Twitter. Just find me, tweet at me, say what you want to.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thank you for being here. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcast. You can subscribe to us there. Give us a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. If you wanted to give us any kind of comments, questions, suggestions, anything like that, you can email me, rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com, or catch me on Twitter at rockchalkpod. Tommy Art, thanks for being here. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.